Okay, good morning everyone. My name is John Tucci from CGU, so I'll be chairing this session this morning. This is the first session that has the two asterisks, so it's a technical flavour to it. The presenters today, there were originally two presenters, Dmitry Semenovich and Michael McLean. Unfortunately, Dmitry couldn't make it. He's had to attend some emergency client session, so Michael's going to take over, and he'll do very well, I'm sure. Dmitry has worked in the general insurance field for a number of years and in various roles, and currently is completing a PhD in computer science. Michael is a consultant at Finity with 5 years of general insurance experience, and he's a member of the Finity pricing team. Dmitry and Michael came together to work on this project following a previous conference where they got together and some sort of sparks flew around the place, and they decided to work on this project. So we're looking forward to hearing to seeing the presentation, and then Michael assures me that his presentation's only going to take about 25 minutes, so we'll have plenty of time for questions at the end. So welcome, Michael.
So good morning, everyone. Again, apologies from Dmitry, who's not able to be here today. He got called away on some urgent business, so just me. Now, I think talking to a few people over the last couple of days, we may have scared off a few people with the technical-sounding title, but that wasn't the intention. It's not actually that tricky. I think, as I was saying to these guys before, I think it only really deserves one star, not two stars, so... At least I'm going to make it my aim to explain it in a way that's quite easy. So I'm going to be talking about dynamic models, and specifically dynamic models within a convex optimization framework. And our aim in putting this presentation together is to get people a bit more comfortable with the idea of using some of these techniques. They're not very well known within the actuarial world, but I think they have lots of potential and could be very useful. And so we tried to illustrate their usefulness by looking at how they can be applied to a particular problem. And the particular problem we're looking at is how to incorporate time trends into models. So I'm going to briefly talk about what we mean by dynamic models. Briefly, what is convex optimization? And then going to briefly describe how the parameter estimation works within this framework. There's a few interesting extensions to some more interesting or non-standard models, which I'll briefly talk about, and then look at some applications to some real-world data. So, dynamic models, essentially, it's allowing parameter estimates to evolve over time. And there's two parts to it. We need to account for trends in historical data that we use to fit our models, and we need some way of easily updating these parameters as new experience emerges. So some sort of way to easily update these as new information comes along. Now, I think this sort of problem has been addressed in one of two ways, traditionally. The first within the context of credibility theory, and there is some rigorous theoretical basis to these type of models, so there's lots of well-established theory, but the literature's often quite difficult to understand and often has a rather abstract notation, so it can be a bit difficult to get your mind across it, and difficult to implement, so... Also, it's not as flexible a modelling framework as we would like. If you want to make some changes to the model structure or something like that, add new features, that can turn into a new research problem itself, and you're not guaranteed to find a solution. So it's not a very flexible framework. Now, expect this sort of problem is dealt with more in the sort of manual ad hoc way, with sort of two-way two-way tables in spreadsheets every month and that type of thing, which is straightforward to do, but it does lack a formal method for evaluating the credibility of the new data as it comes along. So what we've tried to do is think about this problem within a convex optimization framework, and this has both a strong theoretical basis and also it's a very flexible modelling environment. So it's very easy to add new features to models, add constraints, things like that, in a way that's the modelling software can easily handle. And we're also guaranteed that it'll give us a result too. So there's some very nice properties of formulating these models within this convex optimization framework. Just an aside, most of these traditional sort of credibility theory models can also be formulated within this environment we've been looking at. I think Dimitri wanted to speak a bit more about that, but would direct you to the accompanying paper for some details if you're interested in finding out more about that. So it's just to note that all of these sort of traditional credibility models, you can actually build them within this context as well. So convex optimization, what do we mean by that? So whenever you build a model, you're solving an optimization problem. You want to find a set of parameters that's going to minimise some loss function. For example, if in a least squares model, you want to find the parameters that minimise your sum of squares error. So it's simply, mathematically speaking, we have some function we want to minimise. We want to find the parameters x that's going to minimise this function. And often we might have some other criteria as well, which we want our estimates to satisfy, some other constraint functions. Now, it's particularly useful to focus on the class of problems where these functions are all convex. Now, if you're not familiar with the language of convex functions, it's basically like a parabola. If at any point on the function you can see every other point on the function, then it's convex. So, and it turns out that we're quite lucky because most of the functions we want to deal with, say likelihood functions and things like that, are all convex. So for the purposes of the paper we've put together in this presentation, all the applications we look at involve convex functions. So we're very lucky here to be able to use this rich set of theory and algorithms. And I'm not actually going to go into the details of how the optimization algorithms work. It's enough to say that if we're dealing with a convex function, there exist some algorithms we can use. And I don't think that's too unreasonable because, I mean, if you build a GLM, you may not know in SAS, you may not be... may not know the specifics of the algorithm that lie behind it that give you your parameter estimates, but that doesn't mean you can't still use it. You may have learned it at university and forgotten, but it's still a useful tool for you to be able to use. So if you are interested in the details of the algorithms, you can there's some material in the accompanying paper which you can follow up. One other thing about software is that some of these methods, there's not many off-the-shelf software packages that you can use for these algorithms, but Dimitri and I have used the CVX package in MATLAB, which is quite useful, quite handy. It's quite straightforward to use. You just need to specify what your function is, load in your data, and off you go. I have heard rumours that there's an R package also in development, which would be really good if it happened, but... it's only rumours at this stage. I guess that's one of the other sort of impediments to it being more well-known within these sort of circles is the lack of sort of commercial software that implement these algorithms. But the CVX package in MATLAB is quite useful. So I'll give you a simple illustration to explain how parameter estimation works. Here I've got some data. all these green points. Time is on the x-axis here, so I've got 100 points in time, and at each point in time, I have 10 new dots appear. And just in one dimension here, I just want to estimate the mean for my data as time evolves. So we want our parameter estimates to be able to evolve sensibly as new data emerges. Now, there's two ways you could do it that suggest themselves up front. You could simply take the global mean, the blue line here. Obviously, that's not a good idea because you miss out on this clear trend that you can see in the data. So the alternative, which is probably a slightly better idea, is this red line here. You can see I'm just taking the average, the mean at each time point. But again, that's not a very good idea because, as you can see, it's very, very wiggly and volatile. I'm picking up the volatility, whereas I just want to pick up the trend. So we need some sensible way to be able to pick up the trend in this data without picking up the volatility. So ideally, the solution is going to be something of a blend between this global mean and the individual time point means. So that's essentially what it's all about. It's just finding some way to smooth out this red line in a sensible way. Now, to introduce some mathematical notation, this is how we specify these optimization problems. So what I'm doing here is just the global mean just specified as an optimization problem. So we want to find some W, that's our parameter, that's going to minimize this expression here. So writing it out, not in matrix notation, it's just the sum of squares problem. So it's straightforward to see that the global mean is the solution to this problem. So that's the global mean, and the individual time point means, mathematically speaking here, now we've got a vector of parameters here that we want to find. So we want to find a vector of parameters W here that's going to solve this loss function here. And again, it's straightforward to see the solution is the mean at each point in time. So this corresponds to the red line in this diagram here. So we want to find some way to blend these two sensibly. One option is that you could fit a local regression, say over the previous 10 points. So as each new point comes in, we fit a line on the preceding 10 points, which would work to smooth out the volatility in that red line. And in the optimization framework, this is the formula that does that. Now, I've got on this slide, hopefully you can see it, but just this is what it looks like if I fit a linear model on the previous 10 points as each new point comes along. So it goes some way to smoothing out the experience. The blue lines are the early ones, and the red ones. Color varies over time. So blue at the beginning and all the way to red at the end. But you can see how that the view still can change quite dramatically from one point to the next. So it's not a great solution to the problem. So what we can do though is use a penalty term which is going to blend both the global mean and the individual time point means. So here the expression becomes, that's the same as before, but I'm just adding in this regularization term here. So this D matrix is the first order difference matrix here. It's probably easier to understand if I write it out not in matrix form. So here I've now got this regularization term here. This part makes my parameters get close to the actual data, and this term forces them to vary smoothly. So, and you can see what this means. The interpretation is at each point in time, if my independent means give me a big difference between point T1 and the one before, it's going to penalise that difference. So it's going to smooth out large jumps from one point to the next. And I should mention that it is quite easy to have whatever sort of regularisation term is appropriate for the problem. That's the first order difference, but you can have the second order difference. This is the discretized equivalent of the second derivative. If you remember back to high school calculus, the first derivative is the slope, second derivative is the curvature. If I use a regularization term like this, what I'm doing is forcing my estimates to vary smoothly. If you think back to this diagram here, if I calculate the curvature for this red line, it's massive. It's varying all the time. It's going to have a huge curvature. So effectively what the second order difference penalty term does is smooth that out, which is what I wanted to do. And so when I do that, the black line here is what I get. So that's just to smooth out that red line. And that's essentially the key idea in this, is that this optimization framework allows flexible modeling. It's hard to do this sort of thing in ProcGenMod in SAS and that type of framework, but within this framework you can simply specify whatever penalty term you want and it'll give you the answer. So far I've only been looking at one dimension, but it's easy to, if all we were dealing with is your average claim size over time, that wouldn't be so interesting because you can monitor that just manually. But what we propose to do in this framework is allow every parameter in your model to change over time. So, for example, if you have a claim cost model and your four-wheel drives are getting a relativity of 10%, if you don't assume any time interaction there, if that relativity creeps up over time, you'll end up underpricing your four-wheel drive. So I think this is one of the key strengths of this framework, is that it's not just the overall claim size or frequency that we're looking at. We can look at every parameter in the model and allow them to have time trends. And also, it's straightforward to extend this to GLMs. Previously, in the example, I was looking at a Gaussian distribution, but here it's no big deal to replace that least squares loss function with a likelihood function from whatever GLM you're trying to build. So mathematically, this is a dynamic glim. This is my log likelihood function and a regularization term. And it's also, there are lots of other things you could do. Quantile regression is another example. It's straightforward to simply replace that loss function with a quantile loss function, and you can estimate the quantiles of the distribution rather than just the mean. So this could be useful in if you have competitor data and want to estimate a 25th percentile of competitiveness and things like that. Again, it's simply a matter of changing the function in the code and it gives you the answer. So to think about where this could be used, obviously the most obvious example is probably in your technical cost models. It's quite useful to have a self-updating system that takes into account new data for your technical cost models, but there's no reason you can't extend this to other things such as conversion and retention rates. Competitive position, as I mentioned before, is another area you could use it. Also, you could use this as a monitoring tool to monitor changes in the composition of your portfolio. A couple of caveats: that there's a few dangers to be aware of using this in practice. Obviously, your claims would need to be sufficiently well developed to incorporate into this, and seasonal effects would be another thing that you would need to take account of, which, again, is quite easy to do. You can have a seasonal term within your model as well, which is going to strip out the month-by-month effects. If you need to price by a whole year, you can't obviously look at the monthly effect, but that's quite easy to strip that out. So I think I'll go to the second example rather than my first. I think it's a little more informative. This is a set of personal injury claims, and what I've done here is build two models. One is a regular static GLM. I've used the first 24 months of data to do that, and that's the blue line you can see here. So if I assume no time effects in my model at all, that's what I get. And this is finalization month on the x-axis. There are more parameters in the model, but I've only included these four in this slide. So the blue line is my static GLM, and the red line is my dynamic GLM. So you can see how this is quite useful in that if I were to simply assume that there were no time interaction effects, I'd be, particularly for these high severity claims, I would end up being underpriced, or I'd be expecting these to be a lot lower than they are. You can see the dynamic model and the static model both give similar answers in the modelling data, but if I didn't have a system to update this as new data emerges, then you can see how the claims experience is trending off that way, and I wouldn't know what was happening. Also, for example, the legal represented claims, you can obviously, there's a strong time trend there in the modelling period. I would be estimating these getting quite a large error on these claims if I had assumed there was no temporal dimension. And so it's not just fixing up your technical prices that this could be useful for. This could also highlight that these particular type of claims need some review, and the way that they are being handled might need reviewing or changing. For example, the high severity ones or the legally represented ones, things like that. So I guess in addition to simply automatically updating technical rates, you can also use this as a more monitoring tool as well. I do have another example. This is from a claim size model. So there's a few of the parameters from the model here. This is the same example we've shown in the paper. This bottom right-hand diagram is the intercept, and you can see there's a seasonal effect there. So again, as I mentioned before, that was one thing you would need to be careful of if you were to implement this in practice. The way these graphs work is that we estimate a dynamic GLM for the data as it comes in. So I think starting from the first 20 points. So as each new lot of data comes in, it effectively re-estimates your history. It's not particularly important for projecting forward, but the point is that it gives you an automatic update as each new time point comes in. So to sum up, so models need frequent review and recalibration. It's very, very dangerous to assume there's no time interactions in models, and dynamic GLMs are a possible solution to this. And hopefully this has given you a bit of a taste for how these convex optimization algorithms can work, and hopefully they're not too scary. So we think there's lots of potential for these type of models to be useful in practice, but hopefully you have a bit more of a feel for them now. Questions?
Thank you, Michael. If you have a question, please come down to this microphone, or I can walk up to you. Please state your name and ask the question. So, any questions?
Hi, my name is Yang. First of all, great work, and just got a question regarding the parts you mentioned about quintile regression,
mm-hmm.
on the basically getting a percentile for each of the parameter estimates over mm-hmm. time. Would it be fair to say that since you got the distribution of the parameters, mm-hmm. then you don't necessarily need to refeed all these models over time, then you can just monitor the, I guess, the data points, new data points as they come along to see if they mimics what you came up with in terms of the quintiles that you estimated mm-hmm. previously. Would that be a suitable alternative to running, like keep on running these models in the background? To
let me see if I understand the question right. If I say...
So basically, if you go to the next slide. So the quintile regressions. So basically, the slide after this, where you had like, rolling time window. So so basically, as each new sets of observations arrive in the mm-hmm. next period, mm-hmm. right? So what we're doing here is basically we're getting the mean, and then we're mm-hmm. updating that to include the rolling time window.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of doing that, if we basically swap the objective function for the quintiles.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we come up with a distribution for each of these parameters over time, mm-hmm. if you like. And yep. then once we get that, rather than keep on running these models in the background, which I presume is going to take a lot of time, would it be okay just to graph the actuals from the next period against the quintiles that you have estimated from the previous sets, just to look to see if they're reasonable or not, and then that saves the time of having to run all these models.
I'm not sure. At each point in time when you have a new set of data,
yeah,
and you apply the quintile estimate from the existing model. Is
yes.
that what you mean?
So we'll cut off at the time t. So mm-hmm. time t is the last set that you have actually got,
mm-hmm.
and then at that point you've got your best estimate of the quintiles up to that point.
Yes.
And then at time t.1, a bunch of new data sets points come in. And if you plot that against your quintiles for that, mm-hmm. The various quintiles for
yes.
that particular
yep.
parameter estimate, mm-hmm. and then have a look at the histogram or whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
of those to see if they line up each other, would that save some time in terms of having to do all this extensive computation of mm-hmm. including the T plus one into the previous loss of T, and then update your
yeah.
parameter that way?
I mean, you could do that, but
right.
I don't think computational time is such a problem. I mean, if
right.
you're doing this once a month, it doesn't take a week to run the model.
Oh, okay.
So it's just like any building a GLM,
right?
For a claim size or
okay.
frequency. So
yeah.
to do that, with the next month's data,
mm-hmm.
the computational time is not a real problem.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
But you could do that for a monitoring
purposes, right.
purposes, yeah.
Yeah, and another question is, have they, the CVX was first available about 2 years ago. Have they since updated incorporated into that? Like, so right now, all this is like from a frequency sort of perspective. Have they incorporated like a Bayesian layer on top of that to help further, monitor, mm. I guess, the prior assumptions into this parameters?
Mm. Not that I'm aware of.
Right.
Yeah. Probably have to ask Dimitri about details about that, but as far as I'm aware, no.
Okay. All right. Cool. Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Sounds like you've got another collaborator here. So
it's good to see.
Good questions. Any other questions? No questions? Okay. Sorry, we've got one.
Do you have any so based on how often, based on any sort of work that you've done or things that you've seen, how often would you actually run this? You talked about maybe monthly or whatever. How often would you actually recommend running these things to actually look for changing parameters?
Yeah, that's a good question. This is not a well-formed approach. It's a research, still in the research phase, if you will. And that would depend on the type of business you are dealing with, I would imagine. For something like a comprehensive motor, I imagine things can change quite quickly in that environment. Your competitiveness could shift from 1 month to the next, so you would be looking at probably a higher frequency in a class of business like that. And also the type of thing you're modelling would inform the frequency. I could imagine that your retention rate might even vary week by week, at least monthly if not more. So I don't really have a well-formed answer to that, but it would depend on the class of business and the actual thing you're trying to model. But certainly more frequent than yearly, which is, I expect, probably as frequent as most pricing models would be updated, I would imagine.
Time for another question.
Julie Sims. Early on, there was a smoothing parameter in the stuff
yes.
you were showing. I thought that disappeared a bit later on, but I just wondered how you select the smoothing parameter.
Yes, that's a very good question. I'll just move back to the slide that had it. So if you've ever come across GAMs or generalised additive models or smoothing splines, then it'll be exactly the same issue as there. For the purposes of this paper, we haven't done anything very sophisticated. We've basically experimented with a few values and found one that looked right when we graphed it. You can get more sophisticated doing things like having holdout samples and cross-validation and things like that, which, you know, I'd recommend doing that in a production environment. For the purposes of what we've done here, it's probably been enough to just look at the plot, vary it until it looks sensible.
Any more questions? Well, thanks very much, Michael.
Do we have another?
Oh, you do have a question. Sorry, I missed that.
So I was just wondering if you're using this for a pricing. I suppose if you're using this for a pricing purpose, or for, I mean, if it's for monitoring, it's probably not as much of a concern. But have you thought about how you might kind of reasonableness check the parameter estimates as they come out of this, to kind of make sure if there were very significant changes in your data, mm-hmm. perhaps just due to data errors or something like that, mm-hmm. just to make sure that, because it seems like it could be a bit of a black box, and it's great from an automation perspective, and it's quite efficient, but just in case, you know, something goes mm-hmm. wrong with the process.
Yep, that's a good question too. No, we haven't really thought about that. I think that's one of the, I suppose, problems we're dealing with, is that this would at least give you the indication that you needed to go and investigate something. If you did notice a big jump, because you might have a set of graphs or something, and it would be easy to indicate the areas where there's been large changes since the last model run. And I guess that's the value in this, is that it'll tell you those places that you need to look, rather than you having to start from scratch and look through everything. So, but yeah, certainly you would, if you did notice a big jump or a weird-looking result, you'd have to go and investigate that further. But this will tell you where you need to look.
Well, thanks very much, Michael. The quality of your presentation was such that you turned that into a one asterisk presentation. So well done. So, ladies and gentlemen, please congratulate Michael.